Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, boys, girls, animals, minerals, vegetables, I don't know, shadows, whoever you are, whatever you are, whatever you're doing. This is the Waypoint UK podcast, episode 8. 8 already. We've now gone 2 weekly, every 2 weeks. So you can come and find us on waypoint.vice.com or on any of your podcast distributing services of choice. On that iTunes, Podcast Addict. I'm sure others are available. I mean, I can't even keep up with them. There are probably, I don't know, a half dozen or so. My name is Mike. I'm the senior editor at Waypoint, and I'm joined today by the returning Kate Gray.
What up?
A Waypoint megastar, recurring guest.
Drinking tea.
back once again, like a renegade master.
That's me. That song is about me.
The whole song is about you.
It's true.
We'll get onto where you haven't been on the podcast lately in a moment. And also, a dev friend has joined us, Paul Kilduff-Taylor of Mode 7 Games. How are you doing, Paul?
Hello, I'm delightful.
You're delightful.
Yes.
Are you delighted to be here or just delightful in general?
No, it's pretty much the delight is just radiating from my very core.
You do look very delighted.
I'm reclining on the sofa. I've got everything I need.
We've got tea, we've got settees. Everything is fine. So thanks for choosing to listen to this podcast. It's really, really appreciated. You can find, like I said before, everything on waypoint.vice.com. There's articles, videos, further podcasts, all that good, cool stuff. So crashing straight into this conversation for today. Kate Gray, where the hell have you been? Because you've been on the podcast a few times and I was trying to get you to come here more regularly and then you buggered off.
Yeah, well, I moved out of my house in February, which feels like a very long time ago. And then I went to Belgium and then I went to Spain and then I went to America for a month and that's where I've been. And I came back like a week and a half ago. And now I'm here in London, which is a much less exotic than
all
those places.
Back just in time for Article 50. How's that feel?
No politics on the podcast, Mike.
I think you could have just left it at... My six-year-old son was asking about Brexit this morning.
Oh, really? This is like one of those tweets that isn't true.
No, he was. Okay. He was. He was complaining about something that he had to do at school today or tomorrow, sometime in the week.
Right.
And my wife said, well, it could be worse. It's not like you're facing down, you know, staring down the barrel of Brexit or something, is it? Now go to school. And he was like, what? Anyway... Video games are a thing, but you were in America for particular things. You were there for events and trains.
I was there for trains. So I flew to Chicago accidentally 2 days early before all my friends got there. So I messed around in Chicago for a while, had deep pan pizza. It's all right. And then I went on, I know, right?
They go really deep though, don't they?
It's intensely disappointing. You get it and you're like, oh, it's like pizza, but there's more crust, the bit no one really
exactly,
wants.
Exactly, right?
Yeah. It's terrible.
Why
too much tomato sauce as well. Anyway,
that
not the highlight of my trip. But then I went on Train Jam, which is a 52, well, it was 55 because of delays, hour train journey from Chicago. It's very important. Chicago to San Francisco in time for GDC. So in past years, they've had, I think, 60 to 100 people on the train. This year, we had a whole train, 316 people, I think it was in total.
That sounds, as a regular commuter, that sounds like hell.
Logistically, for Adriel, the person who organized it all, it probably was hell. For everyone else, it was like a magical wonderland.
Was there a bar?
Everyone.
Was there a trolley?
There was.
Did
a trolley
come through with like Kit Kats and like peanuts on it?
No, we weren't allowed any nuts.
Appetizer.
On the whole of the train, there were no nuts.
There were no nuts on the whole train.
I think one of my friends accidentally brought Nutella, but it was okay.
Allergies, right? Allergies. Oh my God. It's like a school. You can't take peanut butter into a primary school.
Good.
It's like a bomb alert situation. It's crazy.
Well, we didn't have any of that, luckily, but we did have games. Segway. everybody is supposed to make a game during train jam. Well, not everybody, but everybody who wants to.
Was there a theme or does it not have
a theme? There was a theme. Unexpected anticipation was the theme.
That makes no sense.
It was because we were worried about delays. Adriel came up with the theme, unexpected anticipation. That was the theme. I already had an idea for a game, so I just kind of made it be about that. And people work on games in teams, sometimes alone. Everyone's doing different things. There were quite a few VR games. There was one hardware game which involves trying to find an invisible cat.
What was VR like on a moving train?
I didn't play the game.
I mean, did that room have a particularly pungent odor to it?
We didn't have a VR room. It's a train.
Yeah, but rooms have like compartments, right? They have cabins.
Very small ones, not big enough for VR.
Like people slept on this train, right?
They did. Most people slept in coach, so just in the seats that they're sitting in.
That's no good. For how many for how many hours? You can't sleep in a
chair. Normal sleeping hours, I think. I had a bed.
This is not healthy, Kate.
I know, I had a bed.
Those people are wrecked, no doubt, for that. And they end up at GDC. So all those poor developers like walk around GDC like hunchbacks.
Basically.
That's why.
Yeah.
Paul, have you ever done this?
I haven't, but I've seen the pictures of the developers arriving post-train, and it's not a pretty sight.
Everyone smells real bad. It's great. Yeah. I had a shower, so it's fine.
On the train?
Yeah.
So where were they getting hot water pumped from?
I don't know how trains work.
I don't understand this.
It was fine. The shower was actually quite nice.
It was a good move. Yep. Good. Mm-hmm. I'm pleased.
Another highlight of the trip was the shower. It was fine. So there were, I think, 80-something games in total that came out of Train Jam. Some of them were good. Mm. Mine is okay. It's very...
Do you want to tell us what it is?
It's called Post Burb, like bird with a B.
Bub.
Burb.
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 But how are you spelling bub?
Burb.
Like burb, like the Tom Hanks film, The Burbs.
B-I-R-B. Bird with a B.
Oh, burb.
Burb.
Oh, why didn't you say?
I did. Post Burb, all one word. It's got Flappy Bird style controls, and you play a little bird, a post bird, in fact, post burb, and you have to deliver letters to and from various forest creatures / objects. One of them's a tomato, so I don't know.
Who receives post?
And sends post, yeah. And they're all talking to each other, and there's this like little narrative that's going on. But when we actually imported the letters into the game, they're all out of order, so there's no narrative. You're just delivering random letters at random points in time. And then at one point, you just run out of letters, and that's it. The game's over. The end. Wow.
What would you score that on an old like ONM system?
Like 4 out of 10 because it makes no sense. It's very cute and it's got lovely music because my friend David Fenn did the music and it's very good. Oh. And Andrew Gleason did the programming. They both worked on Titan Souls together. So
the Acid Nerve guys, aren't they? That's their name, isn't it?
Andrew did the art and David did the music.
Yeah. I remember those guys. So I met them at Rezzed a few years ago before that game came out.
They're all right.
Yeah. This is a weird podcast, this actually, because we might end up talking and saying a few things about Rezzed, but this will go out after Rezzed.
Oh.
So if you hear us mention Rezzed,
it was good, probably.
It was probably good. Like, Paul, you'll be at Rezzed showing off some new games.
Ooh. Yes.
Because what Kate's been making post-burbs,
post-burb.
The sequel to the Tom Hanks film No One Remembers. Like, did you ever see The Money Pit?
Mm-mm.
Right, The Burbs was marginally better than The Money Pit.
Good to know.
The Money Pit had a classical composer in it, like who was like the villain, but he wasn't really a villain, but he was after Tom Hanks' wife. But the actor was also one of the terrorists in Die Hard, and so like
I haven't even seen Die Hard. What? Do you know what? I drove past the Die Hard building. Someone pointed at it and went,
Nakatomi
"That's the
Plaza.
Building." Apparently, that's the building from Die Hard.
Is there not like a den where Alan Rickman fell off the roof?
I have no idea. I haven't seen Die Hard. But like, I was just looking at this skyline of skyscrapers and I was like, one of those is from Die Hard, but they all look the same. And I have no idea which one my friend was pointing at. So I've seen probably the building from Die Hard. That's exciting,
right?
I
haven't, apart from in the film. Are there any buildings in forthcoming indie strategy game Frozen Synapse 2 that resemble Nakatomi Plaza?
Nakatomi Plaza, in fact, features in Tokyo 42.
Oh.
Just to pivot
that's,
somewhat.
That's
there
good.
Is actually a building with Nakatomi on it.
That's cool.
Which features in a kind of action sequence early on in the game. Wow. So this ended up being relevant.
This is good. This was an appropriate segue. Alchemy.
I'm very impressed.
This is an appropriate segue. So before we get on to the two games you've got, just give us a kind of a potted history, if you will, of Mode 7 and what it's done and where it's going with these next two games then, Paul.
Sure. So we kind of started in 2005. I say kind of because my business partner, Ian Hardingham, had been making games and stuff before I kind of joined up with him properly. And we made a really bad sword fighting game called Determinants, where you flew around and controlled your sword with the mouse, everything about which was entirely ill-conceived.
I mean, it sounds better than For Honor, if I'm honest.
I mean, you could say that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to, but you could.
I just did. Yeah.
Well, that's fine. Sorry. So we did that, and that kind of led us on to doing some contract work and stuff. That paid for Frozen Synapse, which was a simultaneous turn-based tactical game that came out in 2011. That did reasonably well. Mm. So from that, we went on and did a couple of other things. And now we're doing a sequel, and we're also publishing games.
So Frozen Synapse, I was going through old Edge magazines the other day, clearing up my room, and that got a 9 out of 10.
It did.
In Edge.
Yeah.
Like in real money, that's like 12 out of 5 in real money.
We grew up reading Edge. We used to sit at Ian's kitchen table and kind of laugh at some of the more pretentious things in there. And the idea of, but always with a sense of awe and an appropriate level of respect. And just being amazed by the kind of lack of bylines for some reason.
Which it still doesn't have in the review section.
Very strange. But to get that and just to even be in Edge, because when we did our first game, indie games are always in the like, hey, weird column at the start of magazines. So to get a proper review in something was incredible. And then to get a good score, all of those scores came in very quickly after it released. So we were just kind of in this stunned, bewildered state. Yeah. And I can't believe that some of that happened still, certainly after our previous game. But it was a big deal to us. It still is, really.
What is that like when you, as a you know, the small studio you've been partnering with, you know, when you get that quote unquote hit with the critics, like what does that mean for you in terms of like just the rush you feel, but how does that also convert to profit in a way? Like, you know, like you get this great game and it's doing really well. You need to sell that game to make more games, don't you? So that presumably like this kind of pivots around back to like, we don't need reviews anymore kind of talk. But like games like that benefit from those good reviews, which turn into word of mouth, which turn into sales, presumably.
Right. I mean, certainly then, sort of back in 2011, if you got good press, Valve would kind of email you and say, hey, have you considered putting this on Steam? Which
yes, happened. Please.
Yeah. Sort of, yes, we had in fact considered that. You get this very practical benefit and it gets visibility. You know, nobody knew about advertising then. Very few devs do still. So it's all anything that you can get for free kind of thing is good. But to get that stamp of approval kind of from, we never saw ourselves as being part of any kind of industry or anything really. Neither of us had really worked in the games industry. We were just making games because it was something that we sort of figured out how to do and we wanted to get better at. So to get that sort of, that kind of recognition from something that felt like this big monolithic, you know, the games press is being nice about us, was just a really, really incredible feeling because it just wasn't something that we'd ever accessed other than kind of as fans or as readers. So the feeling that we got from that really is kind of one of the most exciting things that's happened to us. And it's something that you chase, you know, it happens once and you really want it to happen again. So that's a kind of massive motivator for us. Getting good reviews is something that we really, really care about. In terms of does it translate into sales, that's a complicated question because all of that stuff is multifactorial. So if you get good reviews and you come out at a good time, you do good marketing and your game is good and people talk about it, that's all going to combine into an effect. But one of those things happening on its own isn't going to do anything, especially now.
Right, yeah. And you say, like, you know, you're chasing that again, which is what you're doing with a sequel. I'm guessing the reception to that game is why you're like, we should do another one of those.
Yeah, I mean, just that we felt that we'd done something which...
just summarize what the game is again. Sure. I know you mentioned it then, but for anyone who's listening who might have seen the name doesn't really know what... You know, because even in a... Like, if you looked at it on YouTube, for instance, you wouldn't necessarily know immediately what you do in that game.
Sure. Well, it's a simultaneous turn-based game. So that means you make a plan for your actions. Your opponent does the same thing for the next 5 seconds of time. And then the plans play out together. So it's very much about anticipating what your opponent's going to do, be it a person or an AI. And it has randomly generated terrain. So quite small levels. And you have quite recognizable unit archetypes. So machine gunners, shotgunners, rocket launchers, and so on. And it's top down. So it's just sort of planning tactical combat. The main inspiration was Counter-Strike. So the idea that if I know kind of where you're going to be and I know what weapon I have, then I can win. So that was kind of the main inspiration for it, really. And translating that into quite simple visuals, so everything was very, very clear.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's still, I know you're carrying that aesthetic through for the sequel to a bit. I mean, it still looks cool, you know, that kind of like...
One of the things we found...
Neon-y vibe, I suppose, yeah.
Just our last game, Frozen Cortex, we kind of went a bit more glossy and we sort of allowed artists a freer rein and stuff. And that was fun and it was interesting to do for that project. But now I think stylization is really, really important and standing out, having a really strong visual identity, especially with millions of cool looking games. The art standard in indie games has just skyrocketed now. So stylization is one way almost of cheating that. If you have very, very strict parameters, then there's sort of few things that can fail in terms of like your worst looking asset isn't going to look too bad. And that's really what, you know, can undermine a lot of games. So yeah, we're sticking with that style. I think our artist Rich Whitelock has done an amazing sort of evolution of it and just subtly added to it and made it a bit more up to date than the original one. You still get people who will comment like lol MS Paint graphics on stuff, but that's good. Like that's a good, good problem, I think.
Well, I guess that, I mean, you're always going to get that whenever people who understand games to be this big shiny thing over here, they look at, you know, things made by two or three or four people and can't get their head around like how that can exist in the same universe. But it's weird, like you mentioned Edge then about like how like being in the back of the magazine with the other reviews. I like the way that gamers are presented like that. Like I know Xbox are doing a big thing right now where like all these games are sold in the same place. Like, you know, it doesn't matter if you're like a one man team or a 300 man team, it's on the same storefront. So I mean, I guess that's quite what's the right word? I think like you know, it's encouraging for indies, isn't it, to know that these platform holders, like you say, you know, Valve coming to you, like, are looking out for small, interesting games like Frozen Synapse and like obviously Tokyo 42 that people have been raving about for a while now.
It's been a real change, particularly at Microsoft. The idea Xbox program that they've been doing has made a huge difference to us, as well as a lot of other indie developers. And Sony have been supporting us as well, particularly with these larger companies. A lot of it is about learning to navigate the kind of internal pathways of what they're doing. And so having people there at the front end who can help you with that is really good. And so platform holders doing that is absolutely essential. But Microsoft particularly, they ran an event at GDC, so we were able to kind of see most of the kind of key US press out there, just kind of with all of the other ID at Xbox games. And that's super useful. And again, not something you would have seen, you know, 5 years ago in any capacity, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's all part of, I guess, this progression towards people being more readily available to make games and also to distribute them. You know, like I've spoken to the people at Sony before about this, about like how there used to be so many stages to getting a game published or like, you know, promoted through PSN or whatever. Now it's a few conversations with one person effectively in terms of that your contact man or person at a company. I mean, in your experience, and you found this, you said like, you know, 5 years ago, this never would have happened. You know, if you were making Frozen Synapse, you know, 5 years before you did, I'm guessing it would have been a whole other thing then.
Yeah, I mean, that would be sort of in the phase where I think the only indie developers really who had games on Steam kind of before that era were people like Introversion. They managed to get Def Con on there and Uplink sort of fairly early on. And also Mark Healy, who did Ragdoll Kung Fu and now is at Media Molecule. That was kind of one of the, I think that might have been the first indie game on Steam. So this was just around the time people were actually waking up to the potential of like, hey, what if we put one of these weird little games on our service? Maybe that would make some money. So the evolution of that, although it's kind of, it feels like it's happened quickly, it's had to go through a number of stages to, as you say, kind of getting to parity with the bigger titles. Yeah. And it affects the audience a lot as well. You know, you get people saying, oh, I'd never play an indie game. And that sort of feels like a weird thing to say now because there's so many different types of indie game that work with different genres and everything. So it's nice to get that attitude shift. That's really helpful to me as someone. I don't want there to be any negative preconceptions about our games. You still get people who will be like, oh, this looks like pixel art, whatever. Yeah. But that's fine. You're never going to get those people.
I mean, I guess the kind of old umbrella of this is indie, this is not, it just doesn't apply anymore, does it?
Yeah.
You know, we see massive scale in, you know, independent projects. They are, you know, them coming out all the time and just being incredible. You talked about potential there. I heard the P word. You obviously struck upon that with the publishing side of Mode 7 now, then with Tokyo 42, which I'm pretty sure I saw a double page spread or something in Edge of that the other month. You know, that's being talked up.
Yeah, again, really, really incredible and really nice response from people. The thing that really happened with that was as soon as I saw the visuals for it,
because you're not making it in
it's two guys they're called Smack Games two brothers, Sean and Matchick, and they're making it in a North London kitchen largely.
Fantastic.
It's been a really, really interesting one. We decided that we wanted to do some publishing and then went to just one event, which was for developers to pitch to publishers, and saw that and immediately just said, you know, how much money do you want? They were surprisingly reasonable, actually. So it's just kind of
you're saying you got them on the cheap,
basically. Yeah. Yes. And I will happily lord that over them forever. Cheap financially, emotionally, no.
Oh, I see.
It's just to kind of, I knew that if we got that in front of people, it would have a chance.
Well, it looks
of having
incredible
that, yeah,
like, you know, somewhere between I think even the blooming website's kind of elevator pitch was something like, you know, GTA via Syndicate or something,
right?
I totally get the Syndicate vibe, but it's got the way the world twists around, you know. People will say, oh, it's a bit like Fez. Well, it's obviously not like Fez.
Exactly. We haven't played up the Fez thing because it couldn't be sort of more unrelated in terms of gameplay. You know, it's a sort of shooty action game. So that's nice. And people can make those inferences. I mean, Monument Valley is kind of the other one with the isometric art style, but that's kind of there in the visual. So we didn't feel like we needed to play it up. Whereas the GTA 1, I think, is kind of a really
top down GTA.
Right. A lot of people like that stuff. And there's only Retro City Rampage, I think, which kind of comes close in terms of, you know, anything like that, really. So that was the thing we wanted to play up a bit, and that's worked, I think, as a comparison. That's worked really well.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, how far along are these two next games in? I mean, I Rezzed has been and gone, people, but you're showing them both at Rezzed.
Yeah, we have been showing them.
We've
at Rezzed
done that. There are further events coming up though this year which you'll be showing them off at,
of course. We'll be around the place. So Tokyo 42 is basically done now. Ooh. There's some work left to do on multiplayer, but all the sort of the gameplay stuff is there, and we're going into cert with the sort of single player part of the game now. So there's a bit of a jiggery pokery left to do to get it out, but it's really there now, and it's very good, if I do say so myself. I can say that because I didn't make it. I like being a publisher because you can just be immensely self-aggrandizing with no sort of actual direct reference to your own labor. It's a very, very good game. They have done amazingly well. It's their first game. I know they work insanely hard as well, and it's really paid off. So I'm jealous of them as well. It sort of makes this a bit hard. They've achieved a huge amount. It's really good. I can't wait for people to actually play it and sort of see if it lives up to the visuals. I think it does.
So when you say, for anyone who's unclear, like it's now in certification, like what does that mean then? That means like the team has finished it and you pass it to...
Yeah, I'm not really able to talk about that process too much, but you send it off to the platform holders and they do checks on it to make sure it's okay. And it's a process that takes quite a long time.
Yeah,
so
right.
You have to get
take months at a time sometimes.
It can you have to get into that, and then there's sort of secondary things you can do kind of around the process that take time. So it even though it's there, I still can't give you a proper release date, but it's going to be soon.
It's crazy. Yeah. All the things that people maybe don't realize that, you know, even when a game's done, it's not done.
Releasing something on a console, you know, we talked about how nice the sort of signing title publishing side is now. Yeah. The technical side of getting it to a finished product is an enormous job, and people really don't realize how hard that is, mostly because it's a, you know, you can't really talk about the process that
much, of course,
so there's no understanding of it. But it's just for any, you know, as any small dev team to get a game released on a console is a mammoth task.
Just go to Unity, build for Xbox, email it to them.
It's fine. It's a checkbox.
Is it on Dropbox?
Presumably this stuff is, you know, multiplied in terms of potential headaches if you go multi-platform then. You know, I guess different platforms would be like, well, that doesn't work over here for us.
Multi-platform, multi-territory, multi-language. All of those things are just a wonderful Ferris wheel of joy.
Having to make different UI because all the buttons are different on every bloody console.
Yep.
God.
Well, you know, my Xbox has an A button and my Switch has an A button.
And they don't mean the same
totally
thing.
Totally not in the same place. Why didn't someone think of that?
And they all have X's, but they're all different X's.
Yeah. I miss the Oya pad where it just spelled Oya. Press the U button.
Is that pronounced Oya?
I have no idea.
We said Ouya for so long.
It probably could be.
I say it Ouya because the Mariochi song is Hail Ouya.
Right.
Like Hallelujah, Hail Ouya.
Not
so
like Ouya tribe. like the Booyah. That's a rap band.
You're making references.
I should know about music. Paul, something else you do, and you do it as well. You have your lovely Twitters and stuff, Kate. But you know, you do like. I still love the impression that you can get if you're on Twitter or even if you go to conferences and expos and stuff of like indie studios looking out for each other.
Yeah.
And you know, like if you see something, you know, you've got your Twitter reach and something's much smaller, you'll be like, this is awesome. Go and look at this. Mm-hmm. And that's really nice. And it's something that in an industry that is hyper competitive, you know, there's only so many hours you can spend of a day playing games. There's hundreds and hundreds of things that come out all the time for any studio, I think, to go like, this is rad over here as well. Oh, and obviously it was coming out the same day as your game. Maybe you wouldn't be so into it. But, you know, I really like that and appreciate that. I mean, do you think that, I mean, is that a British indie thing? Is it a global indie thing that you've noticed?
I think it's definitely global. The way the sort of US indies and British indies handle it is sort of naturally, you know, different because of cultural differences. But it's kind of, it's always been part of it ever since we started. And it's something that I think is actually unique to games. We'd done some work in TV. Some of our contract work was actually working on TV quiz shows, which was bizarre.
Yeah, you did stuff for ITV.
ITV, yeah, yeah. And various other things. I got to operate... sound on the first series of Hole in the Wall, which is one of my career highlights.
So when someone falls in the water, you press the splash button, presumably.
We cued the Bring on the Wall sound effect.
That's
wow.
I mean, look, now
if this all goes wrong tomorrow, you'll always have that.
I can fall back to that. Yeah. But that industry is really, really cutthroat in the way that people sort of describe. It's not a stereotype. It's quite horrible. And games is totally the opposite. I think mostly in games, there isn't that much actual direct competition. So you don't get the same kind of myth building of like, oh, they did something bad.
So,
yeah, right, exactly. They got this contract because of something nefarious thing. That doesn't really happen in games. So you can actually, there's no cost to you to support someone else and say their work is cool. And that sort of feeds into a culture of people actually doing that and being nice and stuff.
And presumably from that, you know, teams expand and shrink, you know, depending on the project, depending on the contract. You might get to a point, you know, in a couple of years, we're like, right, we need to bring some extra people in. They made a rad game a couple of years ago. Let's see what they're doing. You know, I'm guessing that happens.
So right? you're saying the reason you say games are nice is to butter people up.
Well, no, not that. Coaching. But, you know, just highlighting something makes you more aware of it, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Like when you're retweeting something or like giving someone support, you remember doing that rather than just looking at something and going, oh, it's cool.
Right, exactly. And even kind of playing builds and giving people feedback on that or just chatting to them or giving someone some help with some process that they don't know about, it will always come around and benefit you anyway. And that's not necessarily why you do it, but it's just a good consequence of a good culture, really. I know sort of games culture and game dev culture does come in for a lot of criticism and some of that's justified, but actually there's a fundamentally good thing happening there that needs protecting, I think.
I think that the indie community is like amazingly collaborative. Like I've noticed, even as press, but quite involved in the indie community, that
you're like staggering the line though a little bit these days, aren't you, Kate?
Yeah. I'll sort of talk about someone's game and I'll be like, this game's amazing. And then I'll talk to them and I'll be like, hey, you're amazing. And they'll go, no, you're amazing. And both of us will just blush furiously.
It's all pretty sickening.
It's disgusting. But then they'll say, hey, we should work together. And I'll be like, no, you don't want to work with me. And they'll be like, you don't want to work with me. No. And then we work together and everything's
I'm glad there's an end point to this rather than just like you're constantly like, no, you. And you never get
anything done. It's mostly, it's very European being like, no, you're the best. No, you are. And it's adorable. And
are there any like developers from I don't know, places in Europe, places in the world where you meet them and like, they're not like that. They're just like, no, I'm going to work with you, man. You come here, you work with me.
I've not met anyone like that. No. Even Americans that I've met have been adorably like, we really like your work. And like at GDC, I was messaging people going like, hey, who wants to meet up? And they'd be like, can we meet up? And I'd be like, no, you're too cool. You're not going to want to.
Times like that, I wish that the podcast was a visual medium. I don't know what was going on over there.
Lots of blushing and
I mean, to kind of turn back to making the games as well. I mean, you started mid-noughties then, Paul.
Yeah,
you're kind of starting what last year, Kate, making stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, do you both think that you know the tools to make games is just so much more accessible now? Like we saw this in music a few years ago with obviously programs like GarageBand being available to all, and just you know the boom of the bedroom producer. I'm guessing now are we seeing a boom of the bedroom game maker?
Oh yeah, I mean I've written about this for waypoint.vice.com
Pokemon.vice.bazinga.lol.
Flash Games were this originally.
Yes, good piece. Shared a lot, that was.
Thank you.
Yeah. Love that one.
I think it's more accessible now, making games. Not only is it more accessible, but the tools are much more different to Flash. Flash is sort of limited to, you know, what Flash can do, which I'm sure you've seen if you've played literally any Flash game. And now it doesn't have to be that sort of Flash gamey look. It can be 3D, 2D, pixels, all this kind of stuff. And you can make it in Unity if you can code a little bit, and you can make it in Game Maker if you can't. And you, there's things like Stencil as well, which I've seen children use. They're much smarter than I am. But
my kids are pretty smart these days.
Yeah, they learn so fast.
They don't have abacuses anymore.
Yeah?
They don't even have kazoos anymore. They have, like,
what, children,
you know,
don't
they got
have
flutes.
Kazoos? I had a flute. I played the flute.
There you go. Did you have a kazoo?
No. I only learned to play the kazoo like 2 years ago.
Does anyone learn to play a kazoo?
Yeah, it's
ever?
Hard. I don't know
you
if you've ever tried.
It? It's like a didgeridoo.
No, I have no idea. Why would that be the first reference?
I don't know. I'm just
point.
Thinking about now which one is easier to sneak through.
Do they have a grade system for canoes? Because I'd like to. Canoes? Kazoos.
They do for canoes. I'm not sure.
They both.
Probably not. I mean, you can't really get it wrong because you hum into it.
Right.
So if you're good
but
at humming.
Isn't learning that you have to hum into it, that's grade one.
That's grade one, right. Yeah. Okay. Grade one is tuning a kazoo, I guess. I don't think you can.
But I mean, if you can learn to play a kazoo, then you can make a video game is what you're saying.
Yes.
I mean, what's a kazoo level indie game to you?
That would probably be insulting if I named an indie game.
I don't
game
know.
Right now.
Maybe, but the simple, cool games are simple and cool, right?
I'm happy to say all of Boner Man's output is probably the game equivalent of a kazoo. I think he'd back me up on that.
I mean, what I've mentioned already is that game devs are really, really willing to help in a way that you're sort of going, please don't. You have a full-time job. Don't spend 5 hours helping me make a game. Mm-hmm. Go and do something important. But you can, Twine is really easy to figure out.
Yeah.
A lot of people consider it not a game, but it is one. And, you know, if you just want to make a text adventure, Twine's super easy for that. If you want to do something more complicated, there are loads of tutorials on Unity, which aren't very helpful if you don't understand code full stop, but they're very helpful once you know the basics. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, find a nice game dev friend and force them to hang out with you.
Yeah. That's what Twitter's for, right?
It is. Finding
game dev friends. Yeah. You're going to be inundated tomorrow, Paul. Well, tomorrow after this podcast, Paul.
I'm not helping anyone. They can do it themselves.
Please tell us about C++.
No, I don't know anything about that. That wouldn't be useful.
What can you teach people? What are your credentials?
I am the worst person at Mode 7 for this because I don't do the programmings whatsoever.
What are you Paul?
I don't know. I can teach people how to craft a beautiful tweet. I'm sure that will help.
I mean, some people do need to learn.
What is the date today,
how to
Paul?
Force memes. No, I don't do it on demand. it happens when the feeling's right.
This isn't like a Victor Meldrew situation where I can just make you do the catchphrase.
No, it's not going to happen.
It's going to turn into that Father Ted episode.
Sorry.
We'll all get trapped in a cave. I wonder if Americans get Father Ted. Do you think Americans get Father Ted?
It wasn't even a very topical reference.
I know.
Most of the audience of Waypoint haven't watched Father Ted.
Nor would they know who Victor
if we
Meldrew
achieve
is.
One thing from this, it would be to get people to watch Father Ted.
More people should watch Father Ted. It's like on More 4 or All 4, whatever it is, all the time, right?
All
unless
four,
you're American.
But American.
VPNs. It's on YouTube.
I'm pretty sure Americans have ways to watch anything. Because they have like Magic TV. There's like 300 channels in America, right?
It's probably
and none
on
of them
right
show
now.
Father Ted.
Yeah, I mean, if you can just flick through all like, you know, the crazy right-wing banter that goes on some of those networks.
And
the baseball, just like 300, like just like, you know, 30 channels of baseball.
Ugh.
What is baseball?
It's
rowdy rounders, right?
What's
it's
rowdy?
Rounders that you go and watch, but people just get a bit more sweary and they have
it's rounders with more hot dogs, and a bigger pitch
and hats,
and everyone yells every now and again.
I want to like leap in and defend American sports now, but baseball is like the one that I don't know about. So
it's
if I try to
basketball, I get American football. Right. I'm down
football's
with
good.
Basketball is netball.
It's like sweaty
American
netball.
Football is rugby, but worse.
I don't know about worse. But
I think those comparisons are specious, and I think they're unnecessarily derogative to an important demographic for this podcast.
We can all agree, I think, that hockey on ice is better than hockey like on muddy grass that you played at school, though, right?
Exactly.
I was quite good at hockey on muddy grass. Maybe I'll be good at ice hockey, despite the fact I'm terrible at ice skating.
Yeah, maybe.
Even though I've been like 10 times.
Get the ice skating bits down.
It's knives. It's walking with knives.
It's quite hard.
It's a terrible idea.
Don't try and
it's
eat
one of
your
those things that's really hard, but yet tiny children do it really
yeah.
well.
What's up
yeah,
with
but
that?
When you throw They're a tiny child in a swimming pool, they just swim, right? So I think that's what happens.
You don't just put them. You don't just slide them out like a penguin.
You pretty much just put them in the water and they flap around a bit, right?
But that's not how you learn.
I'm assuming that's how ice skating works. As soon as they can walk, right, brilliant. Do roller skating, ice skating, skiing, snowboarding, paragliding, probably. I mean, I know it doesn't really need your legs, but yeah, you know, it's fine.
I can't roller skate. Maybe that's why I can't ice skate.
Yeah, I'm definitely feeling a theme.
Because your parents didn't just push you down a hill when you were...
Walking is dangerous enough. You don't need to put knives and wheels on it. It's a terrible idea.
Knives and wheels.
Well, not at the same
time.
No, no, no.
Those Heelys have suddenly become a lot deadlier than they are already.
God. Would you put the knife on the front? On the side?
Well, I don't know. Well, I'm thinking more of a skate situation. Just flick it out for when the winter weather
comes.
You
want like Ben-Hur side wheel knives?
Oh, imagine that. Like a wheelie derby, just going around the local park, around the roundabout.
Slicing up the local kids.
Six-year-old.
Chariot racing sequence. Yeah. I'd watch that.
Just blood and snot everywhere.
Oh, that's like the name.
Minecraft
blood
t-shirt
snot.
Shredded.
Nice. Ben-Hur blood and snot.
You know.
it's going well, yeah. I think.
On the topic of independently made video games, as apart from the ones that you've both been making and involved with, like what's coming up that you're super into for this year's kind of indie schedule? Because, you know, you've had GDC, mm-hmm. Res has been and gone. Mm-hmm. There's more things coming up.
There's too much.
What's on the radar that people are into?
My radar's full. I don't know what a radar looks like, but I think
it's
like...
a green blob.
Imagine instead of dots, it's just a big chunky line all the way around. And that's what the indie video game schedule's like. And I want to cry a little bit.
Just a Splatoon map after a match. Just totally plastered in pink.
Yeah, everything's... Yeah. Blue and orange.
Yep.
Yes.
Neon green.
Yep.
I mean, I wrote a little list of stuff I'm looking forward
okay.
to. We both saw Old Man's Journey at IndieCade last year.
I
like
got the
that.
Tattoo yeah. twice.
You've got a tattoo of
they
Old Man's
the
Journey?
They have the temporary tattoos of Old Man's Journey. I've got it twice now.
Don't get an Old Man Journey tattoo for real.
I'm not going to get one for real.
That game could bomb. It could turn out like that the developer is like a crazy racist or something.
Oh,
like,
no,
this
I'm friends with them now. We've met several
lovely.
Times.
They
put tattoos
when
on me.
I met them.
So we're good.
But, you know, you never know who's going to turn bad one day, as YouTube proves to us on a seemingly regular basis.
Sure.
What else have I written here? Yeah, Flipping Death. I like the look of that. Strafe looks cool.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm NDA'd on that. I shouldn't have said anything.
Straff.
Strafe is... Okay, Straff. So when I was at GDC, I spent a lot of time at the Devolver Digital.
Yeah.
I want to say booth, but it was a basement room with tequila. Just tequila in
mega
a room.
Mega den.
And they showed us something from Strafe that I'm not allowed to talk about, but I hadn't heard of the game before, and now
well,
I'm
hang
like,
on a minute. How,
hello.
You're NDA'd till how long?
I don't know. He just said don't talk about it until it's out, and I don't know when it'll be out. But it's really good, and when it's out, I'm going to tell everyone.
All right, fair enough. It looks good, though.
It's
a shooter with old pixels. Yeah,
Doomish.
Yeah, I vibe it.
That's Doomish. The most syllables anyone's ever put into Doom. I played it a bit at PAX East, and I liked it, but I was a bit. It's sort of a bit arenary, and I kind of wanted it to have like levels that
like
are
Doom.
Like Doom.
Like Doom.
But I don't. They have said some slightly conflicting things about that, so I don't know if it's going to have more levely things. You probably can't talk about it.
I can't
because I'm not NDA. I can just speculate wildly.
Pixel Titans making that, is it? I know we automatically see something with Devolver and like, oh, it's a Devolver game. But, you know, Devolver don't
They're so good at
the
just, they snap
games.
Up all yeah. the sort of yeah. quite violent things.
They curate, I suppose. They curated a name for themselves. I saw Ruiner the other day, actually. That's another Devolver game, which I can talk about. It's pretty cool. I don't want to say it's like Hotline Miami, but it does play a little bit like twin stick vibe. It looks pretty cool, though. It's, you know, sci-fi, cyberpunk vibes. Yeah.
Video games, Rhyme, many of them.
Looks good. Tacoma looks good.
Yeah,
I hope so. It's like...
Not played a second of it yet.
Gone Home
but
in
it's...
Space, which I'm sure they hate people saying, right? But
it's got but, some know. More things to it.
Okay,
we did
good.
The same.
I haven't actually played it.
Yeah, there's a few... There's definitely more to it than Gone Home, I think.
Good.
Should we
say what we're looking forward to?
You should.
I will.
Please do.
Okay. Jeez. One of the ones I'm most excited about is a game that came from Stugan, which is super exciting. I was at Stugan. Have I mentioned it, Mike?
You did on a previous podcast. Listen to the archive podcast, and you can hear Kate talk about the Swedish thing there.
It's a Swedish game development accelerator, which a bunch of people go to the woods for 2 months, make games. It's very good.
It's a game accelerator.
Yeah, it makes the game go fast.
I always want to be the person who went, yep, that's our term.
It's not going it makes by sense. Stugan. It's been it's a thing a, for a while.
It's just a really good term. I like it.
So the team is Paul and Armel. They are both a French.
They're both a French.
A French.
They're both a
singular French.
They're also working on it with Pat Ash off of...
He's someone from Wild Rumpus, isn't
works
he?
Works on Wild Rumpus, Beta Public as well.
Yeah.
Curation of games... Very cool. Sometimes we just had
an
hats.
Article on Waypoint.
I know.
That he's in.
About Pat
he's
and
bloody
others.
In it.
So he's helping on it. And also David Knaga, who made Oikospiel. I don't know how you're supposed to pronounce that. Dog opera. It's weird.
that looks amazing.
He won an IGF
for
that. Award-winning David Knaga is working on the music for Vignettes. So Vignettes is a game about spinning objects until they turn into other objects. And it's very hard to... describe without showing people, but I love it so much. I've been playing the test flight versions for months and they keep updating it and me being like, ooh!
So this is a mobile game.
It is a mobile game, though I think it might come out on Steam. I don't know. Okay. Don't quote me on that. Oh God, I'm sorry.
Potentially multi-format. We can say that about anything.
Yeah, it's good on iOS though because it's got this nice sort of tactile spinniness to it. So I'm looking forward to that. What else is coming out? Oh God, I didn't have another one. Cosmic Express is already out. It's already out.
What's that?
It's a puzzle game by Alan Hazelden, maker of A Good Snowman is Hard to Build.
Sort of top-downy, like...
It's top-down-ish.
Isometric-y.
Trains-ish. Sort of. Oh!
Very colourful.
It looks really super cute, right?
It's pinks and purples, oranges.
Like trains in space pods.
And it's quite hard, I think.
It's very hard.
Very hard.
Am I allowed to swear?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fuck it.
So I'm doing a review of Cosmic Express, and... I want to talk about how I've renamed the game because I do know Alan.
Hang
we're
on,
friends.
What level of swear are we doing?
The fuck word.
Oh,
fuck
that's
word.
All right. I just did it. That's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. And I've renamed the game in my head to Fuck Off Alan because it's just, I played it on a train with Alan standing behind me. And every time I was like, Alan, this one's not possible. He'd be like, nah, it is. Mm-hmm. So in my head, it's called
I like
Fuck Off
fuck
Alan.
Fuck Off Alan as a game title.
I mean, the next puzzle that he makes will be called Fuck Off
my
Alan.
My dad's called Alan, so that's good as well.
Yeah.
Well, have you played this game yet, Dad? What's it called? Fuck off, Alan. Beg your pardon.
Excellent. Well, I'll sell it just to Alan people. It's very good. It's just very difficult. Like level one's like, oh, you can get this. It's a straight line, easy peasy. And
what
then
I
level
like
two
that.
Is a bit harder, and then level three is impossible.
Yeah. What I like about Fuck Off Alan as well is it works on two levels for me in a kind of British colloquialism sense.
Yeah.
Because like you say someone's fuck off hard, don't you? Like they're really hard.
Fuck
like
off
tough.
Alan. Yeah.
So
you
like
know,
fuck
Alan,
off Alan is just like hard
Alan.
Man Alan.
Yeah.
Alan's pretty hard. Yeah. Works both ways. It's good. I like it.
And also fuck off Alan, like piss Alan off.
Also
as an imperative.
Yeah.
Right.
I feel Alan's I had a hard time of this one.
Sorry, Alan. I'm sure you're not actually listening to this, but
what do you mean he listens all the time?
Do you, Alan? Do
well,
you?
There you go.
Can have a sequel. No, really, fuck off, Alan.
No, really, seriously. You misunderstood the first time, Alan.
And then the third one is like a very sad, like to the moon style game called Alan's Fucked Off. And everyone cries the end.
Everyone cries the end. Paul, do you even get a chance to look forward to other games?
Not
when you're
as much as
games?
I like, no. There's a couple of things. Signal from Tolva, which is Jim.
Yeah,
is it Tolva or Tulva?
That's pretty
It's got an umlaut,
it does,
it?
So it might be Tulva.
Yeah.
Tulva.
We streamed some of it. Quite
it looks
recently,
cool.
At my point, yeah.
Oh. It really looks like a proper game. None of this indie
it's
rubbish.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's got
it looks
like
nice.
Skyward Sword style.
Who's the dude behind that?
Jim Rossignol.
And his clever partner, whose name is
Don't want to say.
They're all really clever and good, those
they
people.
Are.
Damn them for making
this. Damn them. And so Jim's an ex video games journalist. Yeah.
Reformed, yeah. I think is the term.
Reformed.
Yes. Yeah, he's better now. He's in a better place.
He's been through the process.
Yeah.
So that looks nice. I played it very quickly at an EGX or a REST or something, and it's not the kind of game you can play quickly, but it looks cool.
I guess at those events, you do try to get out and play other people's
games. Yeah, I do, and it's always, it's funny because if you're showing a game, you go through the absolute pain of like trying to get people to play a game quickly. Mm-hmm. And then you go and see your friend try to do that to you. And you just go like, it's fine. Just let me fail. Let me not understand the controls. It's fine. Just go and talk to a real human. I'm just here to look.
And steal all your best ideas. Because that's what who it is. Fine.
Heat Signature, Tom Francis thing.
Also an ex-video games journalist. Oh, yeah. I like this.
It's a weird theme to
video
my,
games journalist. Good
picks.
At making games. Mm. Who knew? We know all the ins and outs. We know more than you.
Well, most video game journalists go on to do better things, right?
I think so.
There's Charlie Brooker is a good example. Hey.
Gillen, well, I guess.
Yeah.
If you could call that better.
Well, making comics.
Yeah. Mm. Should come back.
Some people would say that's better.
I don't read comics.
Not since I was a little boy.
His ones are good, actually. Yeah, I don't really read comics.
They're all about mythology. I'm a fan.
They're all about mythology.
Yeah.
I'm into that.
You'd like Phonogram because it's got all music in it.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff.
You would like that. That's
yeah,
true.
And it's really good.
Yeah.
Every now and again, people do recommend, like, you know, comics or collections of them, you know, the what do you call them? Trade, whatever they're called, you know, when they collect a few together.
Trades, yes.
They're just called trades.
Trade is the actual term.
And I keep meaning to pick some up. But then I go into like foils or something, and they're like 20 quid, and I'm like, yeah. Could spend that in the pub though, couldn't I?
Do you say that to them every time?
I've been into the big foils on what road is it? Up from Cambridge Circus in London.
Is this important to
podcast? No, not really, but I just look at the shelves there quite a lot. I'm like, I should buy.
Are you getting paid off by them?
No.
Good.
No.
Good.
I don't think I've ever bought a damn thing from that apart from a coffee in the cafe while deciding to buy something. I mean, when you're making a game, even like, do you get time to play, like just at home, like casually?
You do it at sort of different times. The thing I find hard is we generally make strategy games, and getting into a strategy game properly is so difficult, especially when you're making one. But I do try, and there's sort of research time, which is kind of procrastinating at work, where you play a bit of those games. But in terms of just fun, like I play Rocket League in the evening because it's so easy to play a couple of matches.
Anything
like that, Overwatch, just, and I'm terrible at all of it. That's the thing. People kind of assume, people go, oh, you must be good at games then, if you tell them that you're working at, I'm terrible at games. Yeah. Just really useful at work because it means I'm good at testing things from the perspective of an idiot. That's very useful. So just things like that, boring, normal things. I did play StarCraft 2 for a little bit more seriously, but
that can be
went by the wayside.
A dangerous time sink if you really get into it, can't
Do you get the same thing I do where you're like, right, time to settle down, unwind with a game, you boot up Night in the Woods or Zelda, and then you'll go, ooh, this is really interesting, I could write about this. And then you start thinking about the thing you're going to write about instead of just enjoying the game and being like, how can I make someone pay me to play this? Do you get that?
Yeah, sometimes. Not with Zelda anymore, thankfully. I just play Zelda in bed. It's quite nice. That's the beauty of the Switch. Like, oh, you can take it on the move. Yeah, or I could just play it in bed.
I did that with the Wii U. My ex's living room was directly above the bed. So
it remained connected. Yeah.
So I just sat there in bed playing Wind Waker on the gamepad.
See, if I could do that, that'd be amazing. But as soon as I take the Wii U gamepad out of my front room, it just goes, nope, that's it.
Yeah.
That's the edge. You've reached the, it's like going to the edge of a map in an open world game and just goes, you cannot go any further. I did that in Zelda the other night, actually.
Oh, really?
I just walked to the edge of the map and it says, turn around.
Ooh,
don't be
exciting.
A dick, Link.
The Witcher does that and then it just like black screens
and it goes, you back, doesn't it?
Stop it.
It's just a shame because like it's what you want to do in open world games, isn't it? See what's on the other side. Because some of them have it, right?
You should go into like a really low resolution, like kind of Manic Mansion world of the game world. That's just like, it doesn't end, but it's just rubbish. Yeah. It's like really, really cheap.
Someone did that with The Witcher 3. Oh. They were like, oh, what's the like lowest settings you can play this on? How do you get Witcher 3 to run on a computer from like 20 years ago?
Right.
And it's just like things load about 5 seconds from your face.
Yep.
Everything's like one texture, like one color.
Should just be randomly generated, just low res nonsense.
It would be great. It'd be like a second game. Ooh.
It'd be almost as hard to understand as the books that inspired the games.
You're not enjoying those,
though. No, they're right. Yeah. I picked up another one the other day. I like the fact that those books precede like A Song of, was it Ice and Fire? Fire and Ice, the George Martin books that became Game of Thrones. There's so much that, like, obviously there are certain cliched kind of things in fantasy writing that kind of pop up, but there are a lot of things in Game of Thrones. You go back to those first couple of Witcher stories and you're like, hang on a minute. Is he just lifted this directly from this.
They did.
Possibly.
Yeah. Did you see that the writer of the Witcher books gets nothing from the games?
Yeah.
Does he not?
Because they went, oh, do you want a cut of the profits? And he went, no, it's not going to sell, is it? And they just gave him like...
We've got a piece in coming. We had a writer go and speak to him and the guy who wrote Metro as well, the Metro books, which became a game as well, which is entirely about their thoughts about, you know, those game adaptations. And I guess that'll be raised. I haven't seen the copy yet, but I'd be very surprised if it didn't, you know. So what do you get out of it? Nothing. I guess he sells more books off the
back. Yeah, he seems to be doing fine. Yeah.
Well, they were already big sellers. I mean, The Witcher became a TV show, didn't it, in Poland?
Yeah.
And a terrible film. Well, I think the film was the TV show just cut into a film length. But let's talk about, let's not talk about what else I've got written here. I wrote down Mafia 3 demo. I like the fact that today, the day of recording, Mafia 3 was like, hey, guys, you can play the whole first chapter for free. Mm. I think that's a good thing. More big games should do it after a while. Just like, you know, check
Telltale
it out.
Does that a lot. Telltale.
Oh, they give away a first one. Yeah, a first episode. Yeah, that's how I played their Back to the Future and went, nope, not doing any more of that garbage.
Yeah, they've got Guardians of the Galaxy coming soon.
They do. They do indeed. But I did enjoy that, and I'm suddenly immediately struggling to think of anything. But like, you know, like games that you might be on the fence about, you know, that they're kind of liked, but you wouldn't want to pay 40 quid for them necessarily. But you know, that little first level teaser is a pretty good idea, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how it works really with an open world game, whether it can just turn it on, like, drive anywhere you want, but only that one mission will be active.
You just have to drive really far in the day so that you feel like
I guess it maybe locks you in. I've never played Mafia 3 outside of like expo previews. So I don't know, maybe it locks you in. I'm sure by the next podcast I will know. But we'll just do a few reader questions to finish with, and we'll try and wrap within an hour. Sean Thomas, who's actually contributed to Vice Gaming in the past about Nintendo stuff. So his question is Nintendo related. He goes, classic Sega franchises would be a great fit for the Switch. Mm-hmm. Yes or no? Well, I was saying here, you know how the 3DS and through Virtual Console or whatever has its share of old Sega games, and M2 did wonderful versions of like Streets of Rage 2, Sonic 2 for the 3DS that use the 3D. Like, basically, old cool Sega games, I guess, on Switch. Like, what does Switch need? What do we think Switch needs?
Probably not more Sonic. I mean, if they're going to do Sonic...
I mean, it hasn't got any Sonic yet, Kate.
Well, they're going to have Sonic.
It's going to have Sonic Mania.
There was Sonic at the preview
soon-ish.
Event, yeah, and I was like, eh. If they do a remake of Sonic Adventure 2 or even just a port, I would be the happiest.
So Dreamcast-y things.
GameCube. It's GameCube.
Sonic Adventure 2 was on Dreamcast.
Well, it was on GameCube as well.
It came out a few months later on GameCube, yeah.
I know.
Which is crazy. No, I'm just trying to put the timeline together in my head. I edited a whole book about Sonic recently. You think I should know? already forgotten those things.
Yep.
That's critical to the question as well, I think.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, I mean... Yeah, I don't know where some of the rights lies with things, but you know, Nintendo
probably got it kicking around at Sega, don't they? It's in a cupboard somewhere.
Yeah,
they've got all those things.
I'm thinking about Knights now. Remember
they should
Knights?
Put everything on everything.
Oh, is that the one with the creepy purple
floaty lady?
Yeah, never played it. Remember people talking about it a lot because I was into gaming magazines back when that came out, and everyone was like, "Ooh," and I forget what they said about it.
I mean, I just really want the Switch to be like, you know, how on the Vita you can play all those old PS1 games.
No, but now I do.
And that's cool. Like, you know, so I've been playing Final Fantasy IX on it. I've been playing Castlevania Symphony of the Night on it, which is amazing. Why didn't I play that 20 years ago? Mm. I'm a moron. You know, if the Switch like finally comes good, and I don't know how they're going to do this, so new 3DS runs SNES games, but my old 3DS doesn't. Like, I want like Link to the Past and like all those like Yoshi's Island on that.
Nintendo are missing a trick with the Virtual Console, which is putting games on it.
doing anything with it.
Like a couple of times a year, they'll be like, hey, remember Ocarina of Time? And you'll be like, yes. And they'll like, yeah, you can play it now. And you'll be like, I know, thank you, finally. Yeah.
But you can play it in 3D.
You can get the novelty. New version, but this was before that. This was on the Wii when Virtual Console was new, I think.
In its infancy, yeah.
And they were releasing games but not really making much of a fanfare about them. So Paper Mario, the first game, came out on Wii and people didn't know about it. And it's brilliant. And Paper Mario 1000 Year Door, best game of all time, hasn't come out on Virtual Console yet.
That's something to do with just GameCube titles across the board, isn't it? Because I remember when we were still talking about the Switch as the NX, and like, will it or will it not have analog triggers? Because you need them for certain GameCube games. Because I don't think there's been a Nintendo pad since the GameCube that's had analog triggers. Mm. We didn't. Wii U didn't. Switch doesn't. Unless you can get... particular pads. I don't know.
Are they not full analog?
On what? The Switch?
On the Wii U.
On the Wii U? No, they're not. They're not squidgies like the PlayStation. They just go little. I'm pretty sure anyway. I'm trying to think about Mario. No, Mario Kart, you AB to... Anyway, I'd like to see some... just give me more games for my Switch, please.
Yeah, even if it's lovely. Just like old ports, I would love to be able to play those on the go. I just want every game that's ever come out on 3DS to be on the Switch. Yeah.
I really want, that's and I'll sensible. Say this here, in case anyone at Konami or whoever the hell owns the rights to this does anything about it. For years, I've wanted to replay Snatcher, and I have no means to replay Snatcher outside of illegal emulation.
I have no idea.
And
what
I played
that is.
It. It was Kojima. It was Kojima pre, well, post Metal. It was like in the he did it late '80s, didn't he? On like certain things, but it came looks to Mega like CD it. In the UK. That was the only English one at the time.
Oh, okay.
In the early '90s, like 1994, I want to say.
Right.
Middle '90s,
and it's no on one's like played it. Every obscure like MSX computer, like super all those old Japanese. Stuff, yeah. Every single one it was put to. It's a very odd game. But it's interesting.
Yeah, like detective game meets with a weird, like you could use the Sega Menacer gun with it for the shooting parts, like a light gun. It's so weird
mental.
But it would work really well on a Switch,
yeah,
because then the shooting bits you could just tap the screen. Mm-hmm. Like I would love someone to do something with Snatcher, but which is kind of a Sega game in a roundabout way. eBay prices for a Mega CD version are crazy though, which is really disappointing. What games, says at J Cruz Alvarez 26, forgive me if I've got that wrong, are we most guilty of having in our backlogs to finish off?
God.
I'll just say, because it was on Twitter earlier on, like, I've got all the Dark Souls games and I totally mean to play them.
Yeah.
And I just don't have time because they're real like commitment things.
I saw you tweeting about this today. Who was it that was like, how have you not played Dark Souls?
Probably it's not everyone. That I haven't played them. I've like probably played about 2 or 3 hours of every one of them. Yeah. And then just
it's
something
hard.
Else has come
they're
along.
Hard and you have to put so much time
and you have to just make
them.
That your game, I think.
I haven't played any of them and I don't want to. I'm not interested in hard
but
games.
What do we feel guilty of that we've got or just had?
Okay, so considering... that I've worked on Nintendo magazines, or just the one, because it was the last one. I've never played a Metroid game, so that's kind of embarrassing. Yeah. And
there's not really been a good one lately, though, has there? So, you know,
I wouldn't know. I would not know. I've never played any of them. And also, considering how much I talk about it, this is embarrassing. I've only played like 3 or 4 hours of Mass Effect in total. Any of them, and I write about it a lot. No more
commissions for you.
Well,
BioWare on the phone.
I know a lot about Mass Effect. I've watched people play it a lot. I've discussed it a lot. I know how I feel about it, and I know what happens in it. I just haven't played a lot.
I think
of
you've
it.
Kind of got it after three hours, though.
I've played all of like Dragon Age Inquisition, for example, and it's basically the same, but in
just
space.
Mass Effect with swords.
Basically.
Yeah. What you, Paul? Better.
Never played a Final Fantasy game ever.
Oh, me neither.
What, not any?
Neither.
Never. Not a single one.
And I don't want to because they look rubbish.
There's a lot of them.
Mic drop.
I kind of agree with you. They sort of... I've tried other games that have that kind of combat.
Yeah.
And it's like... I played Golden Sun on the GBA, which is like...
I've got that. I don't want to play it.
It's got good music.
Also, it's Final Fantasy.
That's true. I kind of feel like one of those games in my life is enough. Don't know. Yeah, that's probably my worst one.
I've not played many or any JRPGs in total.
I'm sure you have.
Like what?
I don't know, Ni No Kuni.
Nope.
Any Persona game.
Okay, fine. I've played Persona 4.
There you go. It's a JRPG, isn't it?
I guess, but I don't like the JRPG bits of it. I don't like all the numbers. Numbers are boring.
You don't like the grinding stuff?
Oh, no.
The grinding stuff
I don't even like Pokemon for that. I want Pokemon to just be like, hang out with friends. Ooh, animals.
Yeah, rather than like knocking them unconscious and then putting them
I'm
in a tiny ball.
I'm bored of the fighting bit of Pokemon. Like, I wish that didn't happen.
It's not very good. That's the thing with all of those combat systems is, everyone's probably going to hate me now, but they're just not great. Like, I think they served a purpose at a particular time when, you know, that was the easiest way of doing that kind of design, but they just don't, they're like spreadsheets. They're kind of...
It's like a boss with 10 million hit points and you have to just chip away at it with lots of different spells and some of them run out.
And I think if you've grown up with that, then you're accustomed to it and it's a sort of mode that you can just drop into. But if you haven't, then it's quite alienating.
Some of the new Zeldas are a bit like that, though. We just chip away at something and chip away at it.
But it feels more organic because it's not in like a little turn-based battle scene. It's like you're running around
But like
and
I was in a bit of the game the other day up the side of Death Mountain.
Yeah.
On the way to the flaming salamander up there.
No spoilers.
And well, it's, you see it from the start. It's just one of those things. I'm not going to tell you how I solved that flaming salamander, but on the way there, there's like enemies and they've got quite a lot of hit points.
Yeah.
And I had some shit weapons. So I was just like, freeze you, hit you, down the hill you go, back up you walk, freeze you, hit you, back down the hill you roll. And it was just like, it was basically like just pressing X through Final Fantasy 13. Yeah. You know, press X to win.
Top tip, you can, there's, I forget which amiibo it is, but there's an amiibo you can tap on the screen and it summons like 5 metal boxes. You can just drop them on enemies' heads.
Well, there was actually this, the part of the game is full of metal boxes. I just left them behind a bit because there's all kinds of little sentries and stuff. Anyway, play Zelda, it's really good. You've just got your Switch today, right, Kate?
I still haven't played it. I ordered it on Thursday.
Right.
And I only got it today because the post office kept not ringing the doorbell.
They have that problem, I find, yeah.
Every time I come home and I'm going like, oh, time to play Zelda, and I get the Zelda box out and just go do 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 because that's all I can do.
Just lick the cartridge for a bit. Yeah,
I actually probably will do that when I go
just for a laugh.
Why not?
I mean, we've got nothing better to do. What is, asks Super_Dario, this is a good one, I thought, what's the future of, oh god, just what happened to my voice, what's the future of local co-op, like connected smartphones, the Switch system with like the detachable things, obviously that's a hardware thing, off TV play. Like, obviously, there's like, a lot of stuff like Johann Sebastian. Joust.
Yeah. Yes, I do like that.
What is the future of local co-op?
All of the above?
Yeah.
Them. Probably,
it's got to be phones, surely, because it has to be something that you have to hand. Mm-hmm. And the Switch is cool, but it's not going to be that pervasive, I think. So it's got to be something that you have already. You can just whack people with your phone. That's.
Is
local
that
co-op.
Fun for you?
That's I love game. Doing that. That's okay. Just strange.
There's some games that use a phone. You can connect
Space
your phone
Two?
With Just Dance.
Oh.
And the Jackbox games, I think. You
yeah,
can,
but that requires a TV and a console. So I don't know if that counts.
That's not off TV play,
is
it?
It's not off TV play, no, it isn't.
I don't. I both do and don't like that term. I'm going to try it out for a bit. Off TV play.
The only one I can think of is Joust. And yeah. I do like that because it feels like a game that's enabled by technology rather than a game that's limited to the technology.
Right.
Like, I love playing things like Towerfall, Love is in a Dangerous Space Time. I'm very big on local co-op in general, but sometimes it's nice to feel like you're playing like old fashioned playing in the streets with your friends before the internet happened. And just
you don't
like
remember
that.
Those days, Kate.
I lived on a cul-de-sac. What I did for fun was
the most middle class thing anyone's ever said on this podcast. Do you know I lived on a road that only had one end?
It's madness. We pulled each other around with trailers. We tried to hit flies with tennis rackets. These are genuine things I did in my childhood. Bicycling round the streets, nowhere to go.
Did you ever, though, go into someone's back garden and throw darts at each other from one end of the garden to the other?
No.
Darts?
That's just shows you never plumbed the depths of entertainment that I had to as a child.
Let me tell you what me and my friends did at school.
Weird.
Well, this is going to get good.
We had a game that's called Knuckles, as in and Knuckles
of
Sonic fame.
Yeah, just hitting each other's knuckles, yeah.
Oh, and as in and Knuckles.
So,
what?
No, like
no
knuckles,
just Knuckles.
That game. You get a coin. And you spin the coin, and the next person has to pick it up between their two fingers.
Mm-hmm.
And if they manage it, that's great, they spin it and it goes around the circle. If they don't, they have to put their knuckles flat on the table and the person flicks the coin at their knuckles as hard as possible. There was blood. There was possibly some bone. It was kind of disgusting, but that's what we...
What kind of coin were you using?
Like a 2p piece.
Is that going to do that much damage? How hard were you flicking? What were you flicking it with?
Your thumb. You put it on the table and you flick it. Like, it seems like just flicking it, but like you can get some... real pain in there. Like,
I mean, this is when you're like,
knuckles.
What, 17, 18?
16,
15. Oh, right, it's not a joke, but yeah.
We did that and we played Ouija board quite a lot. We were weird children.
Yeah.
We used to just hit each other on the knuckles.
Yeah,
this was a girls' school. We didn't like beat each other up so much, but we had ways around it.
Oh, okay, yeah. So you sort of brought in the violence by stealth.
Yeah, I mean, once when we were playing the Ouija board, I don't know if you can play it, but it's a game.
Or does it play you?
Whoa. We'd convinced ourselves, or a ghost had convinced us rather, that there was this girl called I think Emma or Emily, and she wanted to talk to us properly, and we were like, well, one of us needs to get possessed. So we got one of my friends and held her upside down for a very long time.
Why?
In the hope
where
that
was
she
the ghost
would,
entering through?
She would pass out.
Oh, I see.
All and of your, thus become a vessel.
All of your games are so convoluted. Your school games. There's coins, there's
I know.
Possession. Yeah. There's...
I know. What I'm saying is that's the future of local co-op is ghosts and coins and pain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, imagine.
It's a good podcast.
There was a game I saw at Res last year actually that punished, like it had a knife that came down. Did anyone see that?
Knife to meet you. Which is going to be at Res actually.
Yeah.
I don't know how they get that through.
Oh, it's a very blunt knife, but
it doesn't actually hurt anyone. Last time they showed it off at Res, they were like, "Do we need to sign anything?" And they were like, "No."
I mean, I feel like it's not supposed to hurt anyone.
No,
but
it's a
always...
serrated kitchen knife, and it doesn't move that fast. So
It's just a knife in a game. It's not necessarily a good idea, is it?
Well, so I'm sure that they wrote serrated on the insurance form, and that made all the difference.
We're back to those.
It hurts a bit if it hits you, but only in the way that if you put a knife on your hand, it'll be like, "Oh, that's sharp."
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I don't trust it.
Yeah. Don't. if I open the next big PS4 exclusive and it's got like a knife inside it, I'll be quite surprised. Or will I at this point of video game marketing? I don't know. Some of these questions. I want to do one more though.
Yeah.
Let's finish on the Switch because why not? This is an emailed question from Jeff Curlin. It's just asking, this is to all Waypoint people, so America might tackle this one as well. But it asks about the Switch being celebrated for some of the things the Vita was criticized for, i.e. quote-unquote console gaming on the go. You know, was Sony right all along with the Vita, but just got the games wrong for it?
The problem I found with the Vita, because I bought it quite late, was that all the games are very intense, hard to get into other than Tearaway, I guess. You've got like Persona, which is like a 60-hour JRPG, and you've got Gravity Rush, which is difficult to learn the mechanics of. And so there wasn't much that was like, oh, you know this game, like Zelda or Mario. It was it was all just like, wow, numbers and very Japanese games.
They had some of them. You know, they launched with like Wipeout and Uncharted, but that was their big kind of like, look, it's like console gaming on the go. Be like, yeah, but those like shit versions of those games.
Exactly, yeah. Like Zelda feels like a full console game, whereas the Vita never felt like a console on the go. It felt like a handheld. It was like somewhere in between like the 3DS and the PlayStation 4, but like the Switch is closer to the PlayStation 4, I guess is my argument. It's not, but it kind of is. Yeah.
It's a really difficult one, this, because I think it might be something just as simple as like how it's positioned. So it might be that the Switch actually appeals to kids and parents.
Yeah.
And the Vita was like for people who play console games.
For the players.
Yeah. But also this kind of crossover thing Sony does with like, it's a cool consumer device and it's black and shiny and it's got silvery buttons on it.
Yeah.
And that might just be this weird overlap, whereas the Switch might have just kind of by luck hit this like, it's really cool if you're a kid and you have to have one market. I think it's probably that rather than software. I don't think people buy consoles for software at this point. Like, when the Switch has got two things on it.
Oh, I think people are buying the Switch for Zelda.
Yeah, it's a Zelda machine.
I don't think anyone bought the Vita.
I think people like that we know are, but I think it just as a device, it's like, oh, this is cool.
People.
Right. Yes.
Humans, normies.
Are like, oh, and it's got this great Zelda game on it, which I want, but it's cool, I think. I might be completely wrong. I don't know much about it.
I've not talked to any children recently, can't say.
I haven't about the Vita. I'll find out.
No,
I don't think any children have or had a Vita.
No,
which is cooler. Yeah.
It had some really good ideas. It was similar to the Wii U in that the possibilities of the hardware were really cool and no one used them. Like, the things you can do in Tearaway with like
the touchpad on the back.
Yeah.
That seemed like a red herring, the touchpad stuff. I mean, in terms of like getting a load of really good older games onto a portable format, it's unmatched and it still has a really good place. And I think that caused it to survive on that level for a bit, but then
I mean, they haven't killed it quite, have they?
So, no, but they really, it's... I don't think people are making games.
It chugs along
right now.
A small amount. Yeah. I think it still sells well okay in Japan. Like, was it not at... Was it the... Well, was late last year, some Sony event, and they brought out a whole new range of, like, Vita colours, like, for Japan. So.
Well, it's still... I mean, it's really good. So that kind of causes something to persist, right, on some level.
Yeah.
I kind of missed the time when it was the default for new 2D indie games to be on the Vita.
Right.
That was
people
a good period.
People still pushed her. I mean, I remember, like, I mean, Curve make a big point about trying to get all their things onto as many platforms as possible. And I know Hue was on Vita. That made perfect sense on the Vita.
Yeah, some of those ports are really good. The Binding of Isaac port is, like, that's what the Vita is for. Just Spelunky and Binding of Isaac you could have on there.
Yes,
it's worth it for both of those.
I think the best experience I had with the Vita was Danganronpa, which would have been great on the 3DS, would be great on the Switch as well. It's like a visual novel, And so it just feels kind of a bit like reading a book, but you get to do things in it. And I think that's really good for that sort of small screen experience. Yeah. So I'd like to see more of that on the Switch, actually.
That's better than them, because they're repackaging them for a PS4, aren't they? They're kind of putting those two games together, which is cool and everything, but it's a bit like playing Persona 5 now. I want that on my small screen, because that's what Persona 4 was. And
I keep being like, oh, Persona 5, I can't wait. And then I remember it's on the PS4 and I go, yeah. No.
You can remote play.
It's still
going to
be good. I don't want to sit down and play it.
Yeah. Yeah, not so good on train. Not so good on your train jams. Let's wrap. Let's wrap, because the lights are going off in the office
like
around
actually
us.
Actually, wrap. And
the barriers are down. Let's not wrap in the no W sense.
Oh dear.
although, no, let's just not. Where can people find you online, Paul? Where can people find you?
At Mode7Games on Twitter, probably easiest.
There you go. And from then they can find out about all your games. Tokyo 42, Frozen Synapse coming this year.
Yep, Frozen Synapse 2, and what day it is as well.
There you go. Things happening. Kate Gray.
Hello. I'm strengthening my brand. So I'm pretty much, I'm How Not to Draw on basically every platform, mostly Twitter. Mainly Twitter. But also, you know, Instagrams and the, what else? Pinterest.
Bebo. MySpace.
Let's not try and find me on Bebo. I tried to find myself on MySpace. Couldn't, probably for the best. But yeah, How Not to Draw everywhere else on all the modern platforms.
What was your song that played on MySpace when you went to your page?
It was from High School Musical. That's not going
to be fantastic. Do you ever have a MySpace page, Paul?
No, I never did, sadly. I never did. I had a Live Journal.
There you go.
Let's not talk about that.
Rolling back the years. Please follow at Waypoint on Twitter. We're Waypoint Vice on Facebook. You can find all of our other socials through the website, which is waypoint.vice.com. We'll be back in another 2 weeks with the Waypoint UK podcast, where we'll be talking. Kate, you'll be back with
I'll
me.
I'll be back.
You'll be back.
Like in the film.
Total Recall.
Yes.
Yeah.
Haven't seen that.
Commando.
Haven't seen that.
Predator.
Haven't seen that.
Have you seen anything?
No action films, apart from The Fifth Element, which is my favourite film.
Which is great.
How strange.
That's got Bruce Willis in it.
Yes.
I'm just drawing the Die Hard connection. Anyway, do come and find us. Send us nice messages. We're not that horny, actually. And
out of context,
thanks
Mike.
Very much. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.